On September 21, 2003, Odierno issued a memorandum on the treatment of detainees to everyone in his division. Soldiers will treat all detainees with dignity and respect, and, at the very least, will meet the standards for humane treatment as articulated in international law, he ordered. While detainees in U.S. custody may be interrogated for intelligence purposes, the use of physical or mental torture or coercion to compel individuals to provide information is strictly prohibited. Neither the stresses of combat nor deep provocation will justify inhumane treatment. That sounded good, but it isn't clear how much effect it had. A subsequent review by the Army Inspector General said, interrogators reported detainees arriving at the cage badly beaten. Many beatings occurred after the detainees were zip-tied by some units in 4ID. Some units wouldn't take THTs, tactical human intelligence teams, on raids because they didn't want oversight of activities that might cross the line during capture. An investigation by Human Rights Watch found that soldiers in Iraq sometimes would lie about injuries inflicted in interrogations, having learned that there would be no questions asked if they told medical assistants that the damage had been done during the capture. Perhaps the best way to judge the 4ID was that the division succeeding it chose a sharply different course of operations. Major General John Batiste, who commanded the 1st Infantry Division, which took over from the 4th ID in the spring of 2004, declined to discuss the operations of the 4th ID, but emphasized that in his own unit, from day one, that it was essential to treat people with dignity, even captured insurgents. As Petraeus had done in the north, Batiste established a detailed set of procedures for his jails and brought in sheikhs and imams to inspect his facilities. I told commanders that they would be responsible for everything that happened in them, Batiste said. They all conformed to the Geneva Conventions, to the rule of law, and to my sense of what was right from the way I was brought up. And like Petraeus, he had only one notable instance of abuse, and that happened not in a detention facility, but when a sergeant appears to have had a nervous breakdown during field operations. One day in the spring of 2004, Major General James Mattis was walking out of a mess hall in Al-Assad in western Iraq when he saw a knot of his troops intently hunched over a television, watching a cable news show. Marines weren't usually so attentive to current events. "What's going on?" Mattis asked. It was, he learned, the revelations about Abu Ghraib, along with sickening photos of cruelty and humiliation. A 19-year-old Lance Corporal glanced up from the television and told the general, "Some assholes have just lost the war for us." The detainee abuses that would resonate most took place not out in the divisions operating in the provinces, but on the outskirts of the capital, in the Abu Ghraib prison. All of the Army's problems in Iraq in 2003, poor planning, clumsy leadership, strategic confusion, counterproductive tactics, undermanning, being overly reactive, came together in the treatment of prisoners. A wide-ranging scandal that eventually was summarized in the phrase Abu Ghraib, after the big prison west of Baghdad, where many prisoners wound up and where some were tortured.